Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Dan, we have a CM Punk Samoa Joe match on the calendar one-on-one for the first time in a very long time. What did you think of what they did tonight to set that up with CM Punk on commentary as Samoa Joe? Not surprisingly, even if you didn't read the spoilers. And Dan, by the way, I'm getting a ton of interference I didn't hear on our sound check. I don't know if your speaker got or your.
Let me try.
Is that, did you lose me or is that any better?
Now you're back. Yeah, now you sound good, just like in our.
Okay, I was using my little lamp here, my little Elmo I use for teaching, and I guess that somehow threw off the sound. So I'll go a little more in the dark. That's okay.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, wow, that's weird.
I don't know why, but that's what happened, yeah.
No problem.
But yeah, to get to your question, I really like CM Punk on commentary. I like the main event a lot. I heard you and Todd talking about the ratings for this show, and I think this is kind of a maintenance show. Like, I kind of think the rating will be lower than last week. I don't think there was anything nearly as compelling this week in terms of top to bottom, lineup on the show as what they have going next week. But I thought, you know, there were a lot of small little side comments from Punk that I thought were pretty good, and it certainly was quite, he was in the moment, right, that he was really focused on Samoa Joe, and he admitted he'd never beaten him, and I think they've done a nice job of building that up, even though we saw it coming pretty obviously, as you mentioned.
Well, elaborate a bit what you liked about Punk on commentary. I mean, Punk is Punk, you know, he's like chill, he's wry, he's observational, he's cocky, while also being a little self-deprecating. And obviously he can pull from history when he talks about Samoa Joe. He also, you know, put over the atmosphere in the arena, which might have been a bit of an overstatement considering how small the crowd was and how obviously so it was when you just listened to the echoing. But he said that a 15-year-old him would have had goosebumps because this 15-year-old him would have thought this is why I got into wrestling. But he was trying to, you know, put over Joe versus Strong and the history between those two.
Right.
But yeah, what stood out to you?
I mean, I guess with Punk, it's not anything all that obvious. I'm going to be completely honest. I have one note here I can't read that I wrote in my own handwriting, which is always embarrassing. Because I wrote down a couple things that he said, and it looks like giant moon. So that's not what he said. I don't know what he said the second time. But the first thing where he just said, well, I'm bigger than Canada. It's just those little, like, that's
bigger
who he
is. Bigger than Wayne
is.
Gretzky.
Yeah, bigger than Wayne Gretzky. Like, no. I'm that arrogant guy, and I believe it. It's not, it doesn't come across as insincere or phony. And, that he's the one Bill Phil, as he talked about earlier. I mean, if he's going to be on there, he needs to be full CM Punk. He needs to be full, arrogant, even if it is kind of, on the sly. And so, and just like, you know, he and Nigel and Kevin worked really well together. I like the announcing of this show. I prefer the less frenetic. I prefer Kevin Kelly to Excalibur. I prefer kind of the conversational, more natural feeling commentary myself. And so there's a lot I like about this show just in terms of the structure and the interviews at the beginning of the show and the Saturday night's main event feel. I don't think this was a particularly strong episode compared to the other two or next week probably. And as you mentioned, the crowd was I thought it was a noticeable negative. So I'm kind of jumping around, I know, from what you asked. But Punk is – he's certainly not nervous there. He's natural. It feels like a sporting event, the way he calls it, someone that's actually scouting his opponent. So I like his persona, I guess, within all that is CM Punk, I guess.
As far as Kelly and Nigel. I like them. I agree. They're a refreshing change, a bit of a contrast to Excalibur and Taz and Shivani and even Ross when he's in there. There is something about Kelly's inflections, and it's always bothered me in New Japan too, where his inflections seem somewhat unnatural in
That's
the way
fair.
That he says things. And I don't know how you break that habit, but his inflections are just not really in tune with how people actually talk. And it gets to me and really distracts me. So that's bothersome. And then he really irritated me at the top of the show because he said, not near the, in the first, no, I guess the second match, but the Ethan Page, MJF match. Ethan Page is going for an ego's edge, seconds into the match. And Kelly preposterously exaggerates and
right.
goes, if he hit that, we'd have a new champion. It's like,
yeah.
no, don't lie to us. Don't. Yeah. Be a propaganda artist. Don't force stuff. People kick out of people's finishers all the time. There's no way one ego's edge against MJF in the opening minute of a match is for sure going to crown a new champion. Why say that? What is going on in your head mentally where you think that's a good thing for a pro wrestling announcer to say is to grotesquely, obscenely, I'm overstating things a little bit here, like he did, exaggerate that point. So
I suppose that he spent some time in WWE would be the counter to that, that they maybe he still had that drilled into him from a long time ago, because no, I don't care for that either. But, you know, even it's just where he involves people, like even I know Jim Ross, you know, had his rough go of it by his standards. But even, you know, just the way he kind of, well, what do you think, Jim? And he did that with Punk, obviously. And you could tell Punk. The fact that he likes and respects both those guys, I think, kind of made it a better environment, too, when he was doing the commentary. So, but, yeah, I like that. You know, he thinks of himself kind of as a point guard, I feel like, and tries to bring out the best of the rest of the rest of the announced team.
Absolutely. I'm picking on a couple things about Kevin Kelly, and I think they're important points to make, to be honest. But he's really good. I mean, obviously, and people love his work and he brings a different tone to things. But I would just say, I don't think he's beyond improvement. You know, I mean, I think there's something right. different about being the English announced team for New Japan, calling New Japan style matches and what he's doing now, which is a blend of that. What he's done in ROH, which is, you know, more indie, relax. I don't know. I mean, he's been good on ROH pay-per-views too. And then what he did back in WWE, and every setting calls for a different, you know, a little bit of a tweaking of what you do. And, if I could improve one thing, it would be for his inflection to not sound so unnatural all the time.
It's going to be like when you used to talk about the Michael Cole ruining the three counts. Now I'm going to be like much more aware of that in the future. So thanks a lot, Wade.
I know. I do feel a little guilty pointing this out. It was on my mind the whole 2 hours. I think because it was it was worse this week than the last two, and I think because it was pre-taped, I don't even know if it wasn't post-produced there at ringside, but there might have been a little bit of like fatigue and we're not live, and so
yeah.
maybe by next week the adrenaline of being live will kick in and it will be so bad. All right, I'm done. I'm not promising I'm done, but I'm pretty sure I'm done with my
okay.
We'll see how it goes. All right. Yeah, I already broke my promise. All right. To CM Punk. Yes, Kelly is good at throwing to his commentators, asking them questions, and same thing with the guest. And I did like that. I like Punk at the end. He goes, looking at Joe, and he goes, I'm not impressed. And then he looks over at Kelly and goes, well, I know I'm in for the fight of my life. You know, like he says one thing, but then he sort of lets you know what's going on inside his head. So he shouts one thing to Joe, but then kind of as an aside says it to Kelly. And obviously that seeing Punk in that environment is one of his strengths besides what he can do in the ring. He does bring something different to the presentation that's just more real, more grounded than a lot of the, you know, quote, more character-based wrestlers. And I think there's something refreshing and appealing about that. And obviously he's got a natural confidence that he puts forth on camera. I think there's a mix of that confidence and insecurity that plagues him out off camera. Kind of a mix from a personal standpoint for people who know him well and what they tell me, and I think what people have kind of picked up on. But on camera, I like this version better than the initial Punk who came back, which was, well, I don't know if I'm good anymore. I don't know if I have it anymore, and I'm going to put young guys over, and I just want to get along with everybody. It's like, no, people want to see the guy, even if he's 44, he still looks the part, and so far he's wrestled the part. They want to see a guy who is going to talk the talk and present himself as an alpha badass in this AEW environment.
Absolutely. And as much as this is like my favorite wrestler in the world, but he's not there to be Tanahashi. He's there to be the lead dog, or what's the point? Or at least in the conversation. I think you and Todd, again, we're talking, maybe it was you and Rich, about, well, you know, that you know, even had he not gotten hurt, he probably would have lost the title to MJF, but he's going to be in that position, and that's what justifies the expense. I mean, that's what you have to do with him. And although I am intrigued on what they do, I think there is an argument to be made, especially considering the way the brands are not split, but kind of split. It would be actually to have Joe win next week. I don't suspect that's going to happen, but I think then they could build back to Punk beating Joe later and maybe have Ricky Starks win the tournament. I don't see that going anywhere near that direction, but that might be my vote, and I probably would be in the minority in that. But there's just something really compelling, and when he brings back up, I've never beaten Samoa Joe. We've wrestled mm-hmm. three times. You know, I like, even at the end, even though most people might not catch it, where Nigel's like, this is the fourth match, Joe Punk 4 next week, or Punk Joe, or whatever he called it. I like that. I think they have a really nice build for next week's show, but I mean, this week's show, I like I said, I feel like it's going to be not a ratings killer.
It is not what they should have presented in week three. You know, we had Money in the Bank earlier. Todd Martin, Rich Fan, and I talked for close to an hour about the show, and that's up for VIP members already right now. So go VIP, everybody, to hear our review of the show from earlier today, 3.5 hours of a show that Rich Fan rated 9.5 out of 10, by the way, our 1 to 10 scale. And that is that roundtable review is available for VIP members, pwtorch.com/govip, if you want to go VIP and get all the benefits that come with it, including ad-free versions of this show.
Do you think threw in the towel because of that, Wade? I mean, maybe that's their attitude. Like, we're going to have a hard time drawing an audience after a 4-hour WWE pay-per-view with the, I forget what they call them now, the prime event, live event, or whatever, premier live event.
Premium.
Maybe that was premium live event. Sorry. yep. Maybe that was the mentality. Cause yeah, I was just like, wow. When I was going into this show, I was like, there's just not a lot of meat to the bone here.
I think they had a really busy stretch with Forbidden Door and the launch of Collision. And there could have been a scheduling issue beyond that, that I maybe once knew and forgot why they had to pre-tape Thursday. But the fact that it was a pre-tape show, I think it probably would have been pre-taped, even if not for Money in the Bank. And, you know, I mean, if this had been live and you have, you know, two Owen Hart tournament matches and Punk on commentary, I don't know. I mean, Chris Statlander defending against somebody who, you know, most Dynamite and Collision viewers aren't familiar with isn't red hot, but MJF making his Collision debut. I mean, I think on paper, Tony looked at this and thought this is a good episode, live or pre-taped. I think what hurt is, I mean, and, you know, Miro's out there and Andrade's on a promo. They're showing off the people who are, right, you know, kind of Collision exclusive. You had Sean Spears out there or, you know, backstage, but still appearing. And so they're featuring talent that you haven't seen overexposed on Dynamite. I think if it was live and if it was in front of a bigger crowd in a more modern building, I think it could have seemed red hot. I mean, I do think that smaller crowd where someone sneezed, you heard them, is it really pulls down a show more than what is probably a minority of people watching knowing it wasn't live. Like, I mean, obviously a lot of people know it's not live, but I mean, most people don't think about that. I know it's hard to believe with the way crowds who attend AEW know so much about everything. And there's a lot of, you know, insider references on promos and stuff by wrestlers catering to that. I still think out of 500 some thousand people, most weren't even thinking about live or tape.
No, that's fair. I know I'm repeating myself, but yeah, that crowd was a real negative, frankly, just in terms of the atmosphere of the show. So I think that's fair. I have a lot. I usually really don't have that many criticisms of AEW, but I have a lot of nitpicks that we could get to maybe throughout the course of the show. But one of them is, you know, you mentioned Miro and Andrade, but where's Scorpio Sky? Like, did I miss something? Like, I saw that ad for the first week, and we're going to see Scorpio Sky again. I mean, and I'm legitimately asking, like, is he injured? Is there some reason that we're 3 weeks in and no sign of him? And anyway, I have a few others, but I'll save them for throughout the course of the discussion.
Yeah, I mean, they did vignettes the first 2 weeks, and then this is the first time he wasn't on the show. I think they're just, you know, easing him in. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him next week. I've heard of no setbacks or injuries. And, yeah, I mean, I guess he just wasn't on the Canada trip at that part, and they had done their vignettes, and they didn't want to throw him in a match yet. I mean, you know, Tony can look at this lineup and go, it's a loaded lineup. You know, I mean, you got the tournament matches, and you have MJF defending the title, an unannounced title defense against, you know, upper mid-carder and Ethan Page. And, you know, Miro winning a squash and Statlander defending her title. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's somewhere in between a typical Rampage and a above average Dynamite. But, yeah.
I mean,
I'm not putting it over as like a made, you know.
Right. No, I felt like this show did feel a little more like a Rampage than obviously the first. And that's Punk wrestling, obviously. I mean, you know, The first two, they had, you know, big time main events to draw to. And then you look at the card next week and okay, now we're back. I feel like, you know, I do think Joe and Punk will draw a crowd and FTR and Juice and Jay is to me a huge match. I'm excited about that. So there's a lot there next week. So it was just interesting that it was just, you know, I think you take Joe and Roddy in a 1 hour show and that's the main event, that's going to keep an audience. But for 2 hours, and then you do have the Statlander match and the things that are just seemed a little more filler. That I'm okay with squash matches. That's fine. They want to have a Miro squash match. But, yeah, it was just a little more Rampage than normal, I guess, for three weeks.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce the show and ourselves, and then we'll get to callers. We got Nick and Don as our first two who are on hold already. We'll get to some emails, too. But first, we will introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, July 1st, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, a long-running weekly print newsletter available also in digital PDF format for our VIP members every week, and also pwtorch.com, our main website with news, live TV, and pay-per-view coverage, and editorials. Check out my rundown of Money in the Bank from earlier today and my report on Collision. It's been a long but fun day covering professional wrestling. And I'm glad that you have chosen to listen live or download the show and listen on delay. So thank you for that, all our listeners. The other voice you hear is Dan Keister. He is a pwtorch.com contributor, not on a regular basis lately, but has definitely helped out, especially on the New Japan front in some reports and audio. And it is great to, and just I hung out with Dan at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa for years, for many years in a row. And it is great to do a show with you, Dan. Welcome.
I appreciate it, Wade. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to hear from the callers.
So since you are a new voice, and we're going to try to introduce a few new voices now that we have a second AEW show, tell people just a little bit about your background as a wrestling fan and, you know, heck, message boards. everything. Just tell people where your passion is.
Yeah, long time, you know, subscriber to the Torch before I started contributing. And started watching wrestling probably just after you did, I would guess. We got an independent station maybe in 1983 where we started getting world class, and then we got Mid-South. And so my fandom kind of comes from non-WWE stuff initially. I guess Mid-South was my favorite, followed by Crockett and all that. And so I've been a fan since the mid-80s off and on, and I guess for about the last 7 or 8 years, my primary focus has been on New Japan. I enjoy watching that above all else. And I went to we all met up at the All In show. I was really excited about that in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in contact with Chris Harrington recently. He was there, and Rich and yourself and a lot of different folks, we were able to meet up there. And so I have been a pretty religious follower of AEW since it got started, and that and New Japan are probably my primary focuses. I listen to you pretty religiously, particularly you and Rich and you and Todd. And, you know, you're talking about how many hours there are in the day. And I've just decided to devote most of my fandom, I guess, to AEW. I don't know how people can keep up with everything right now. It's just, it's overwhelming. And it's interesting to follow the competition though. I teach sports economics and I do compare AEW to the AFL or the USFL, and it creates some really interesting discussions amongst the students. So it's I teach economics here at Kansas State University for my real job. I guess I should say that.
Yeah, that's great. Great bio information, and it's you bring a really cool perspective, one for having watched as nearly as long as I have, and then just the direction you've gone in terms of where you've focused your a lot of time for wrestling, and then adding the economics professor aspect to it and incorporating that into your teachings is super cool. So, well, we got a lot more to talk about on today's show, and we welcome our live streaming listeners to join us. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you call and want to be on the show, push 1 after calling. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pewtorch.com. You don't need to listen live to participate in the show. You can be watching Dynamite or Collision or Raw or SmackDown for that matter and email us during the show. And then if we read your email on the show, you can listen to it the next day or whenever you get around to listening. That's wadekellerpodcast@pewtorch.com. All right, we have a lot more to talk about, including MJF in an impromptu title defense, Jay White getting his chance to show off his gift of gab for the first time, I would argue, in a setting that really suits him and allowed him to shine. I want to get Dan's opinion on that for sure and everything else on tonight's show. So let's get to our first call. And as noted, we got Nick from Brattleboro up first, and then Don from St. Louis is on deck. Nick, thanks for calling Saturday night. How's it going?
Good, good. I have some leg issues, so I'm laid up on a Saturday night. So what better to do than watch Collision and talk to you guys? So,
I don't need a leg injury to stay in on Saturday night anymore.
Yeah, no, actually, quite frankly, neither do I. I'm turning 66 in October, and the old Saturday night life is out the window. But one thing I
none
did
of us are helping the demo, Nick.
No, I'm not helping the demo at all. I used to
none
work
of the
in
three
television
of us on the line are helping the demo.
Yeah. I used to work in television, and believe me, 18 to 49. 25 to 54 is it. After that, Geritol commercials. That's it.
Well, they're all brand. Everybody's brand loyal by the time they're in their mid-50s. They're like not. They're not trying new stuff. They got all the furniture and toys they
need. Yeah. Well, that's they've already picked Crest toothpaste over Colgate, and so who cares? One thing I wanted to ask you as a favor, as one of your VIP members, is at least maybe, while Collision's getting going and we really see where it's going to end up, the +3 and the +7, I would love to get information on, through you. I know you get that information, and just if I can just proposition that at least for the next few weeks you try and keep us advised, just because I think that's going to be an important part of Warner Warner Discovery's evaluation of the show.
Absolutely. In fact, I talked about it on the Wade Keller Hotline a couple days ago and pulled out the +7 number for the first time. I might have included it in my last ratings report at pwtorch.com too. The first episode of Collision that drew a nice 816,000 by 7 days had drawn 952,000. So that's an increase of close to 140,000. That isn't that out of line with a typical Dynamite. Dynamite, that's within a few days of that, the June 14th episode, drew 832,000 viewers, so a little bit more, and ended after 7 days with 962,000. Also, that's a gap of 130,000. So Collision didn't pull any more people after 7 days than Dynamite. So the idea, a very small sample size, statistically, 1 week, and it was a higher number than usual that they're going to draw live, because I think people just wanted to be there to see Punk live.
Yep.
So now that the rating dropped the following week, maybe the seven-day viewership total will actually not lag equally far behind, and some of that drop-off are people just choosing to watch Sunday or Monday or Tuesday. Instead, that I'll know, sometime in this coming week. I'll have that data.
Yeah, I was working for ABC when the whole, live +3, live +7 came into 4, and it was a real challenge, and did agencies want it, not want it, but it's become just such a way people watch these days is through streaming services, you know, like Slang or YouTube TV or FUBU, that it's just become the norm, especially younger people. I mean, they don't it totally they're in complete control of their video access. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can maintain 800,000 in Live Plus 7. I think Warner's would love that. I just, you know, but. So anyway, that's just a request.
All true.
So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
In general, I love the wrestling on A&W. I just want more Bloodline. And I saw some things today with Jay White starting to talk a lot, like you mentioned, and setting up Joe and Punk, who I also thought did great on commentary, that I'm hoping that they can get some more story-driven, even in Dynamite, too. I mean, it's just it seems like a year ago, all the stories kind of fell apart, and it could have been because of injuries or anything like that. But I'm just wondering, do you see them ever doing that, or is Tony just so much a action, you know, the flip one thing to another that building a slow story just doesn't exist?
Well, Dan, you know, remember when World Class Championship Wrestling came on? I got it around the same time you did in 83 with Yvonne Erickson, the Freebirds, Iceman Parsons, Dynamite Chris Adams, Ric Flair would appear, gorgeous Gino Hernandez, who I'm trying to think who are big names I'm missing, who are, you know, Missing Link,
Gang,
Kamala.
Another Missing Link, yeah.
Devastation Incorporated with Skander Akbar. Great stuff, and there were some good talkers, including obviously the Freebirds and Skander Akbar. The Von Erichs were not. But the show we got, which was, you know, meant for national syndication as opposed to the local world-class show that aired in Texas on the local affiliate, which was more, you know, had matches, but was more interview-based to try to help sell tickets for the upcoming shows in Dallas and Fort Worth in that area. There weren't a lot of promos. And I also wanted more promos. But I was so used to squash match, localized promo, squash match, localized promo. That's all the AWA, the NWA, and WWF were serving up at that point. That it was refreshing. It's like, wow, this is like a window into a house show that I could only dream of attending, and I got it for an hour every week, and I loved it. But from a character development standpoint, even then as a kid, I was craving more promos because that was such a thing that drew me in to becoming a wrestling fan. Bobby the Brain Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel and Hulk Hogan and Mad Dog Vachon. I mean, they're just Crusher Jerry Blackwell, one of the great underrated heel promos. So many great talkers back then. And you know, Tony Khan is a product of his what he watched and his upbringing. And clearly his passion is the bell-to-bell action more than the interviews. It's not void of caring about interviews. He understands it's important. But I think he thinks strategically that's how he can differentiate himself. I think it's a deliberate choice to not do as much of it, although I think he'd argue he doesn't do that much less than WWE. You know, I don't have statistics on that, but I mean, you think, hey, we do in-ring talking segments and backstage interviews, and I think we get more of that lately. You mentioned early that you like the Saturday Night's Main Event format of four of the wrestlers who are going to be involved in two of the top matches on the show talking in sound bites. I think that's been a nice addition to Collision, and I'd like to see them continuing to do that. So there's different ways you can do promos. So we got Lexi Nair backstage tonight, Nick, talking, you know, doing multiple interviews, three or four of them. And we had an in-ring segment, Tony Schiavone and Jay White. I actually thought they struck a pretty good balance. And then you throw Punk on commentary, and that's another, you know, different way to get across a wrestler's personality, something he did on his first stint before his injury layoff. So I don't think Tony Khan is too far off. So, Nick, I'll throw to you after I get Dan's take on that. Dan, what do you think of the balance and the mix of talking and wrestling and how AEW has done that in their history so far and mostly lately?
Sure. Well, a couple things. One I don't like is the constant abuse of the announcers. You know, and Jay White's a little more charming about it, but like Tony Schiavone should be treated with respect. And I know it's easy to be a heel that way, but I, you know, same with Lexi Nair, and she's a little doesn't have the gravitas of Tony Schiavone, but you know, it's just like when they constantly just push the announcer, the interviewers off to the side. They don't do that with Renee too much, so at least they have that. But I'd like to see a little less of that. Well, that's right. That's especially in Canada, right? But you brought up the bloodline, Nick, and you know, I saw a lot. Wade, we were getting to that Jay White promo. I saw a lot in that promo that for 1 week, and I don't want it. Who knows where it's going? But it seemed to me like there was a lot of subtleties in that promo that could lead somewhere. For example, they're talking about how great the Guns were and how they shouldn't have lost the World Tag Team titles. But who's getting the title shot next week? It's Jay and Juice, right? And I wouldn't mind seeing them win that and then have that little, you know, kind of boiling thing underneath there. And I don't know if that's what they're going for or not, but they left enough hidden I felt like I really liked that interview a lot because I thought there was a lot on the surface that was compelling. As Wade mentioned, Jay is a tremendous interview, but they also had a lot that was maybe you could think about and try to interpret it for yourself. And that's the kind of stuff I like to see, you know, the slow heel turn of the Koloffs against Don Kernoodle or something, if I'm trying to find things I can date myself on. And there might be a little slow burn there that we might not be looking at, which I really like. And then all the subtleties with Punk and Joe and Adam Cole being there, right? I mean, how did they interact? They didn't really, yep. But it's just there's some stuff there that I'm hoping that it's going to pay off for the attentive viewer over time. And I have a feeling it will.
Oh, overall, do you think there should be more – besides the abuse of interviewers, which I am totally with you on, helps to have John Moxley hanging out if you're Renee Cat, not have people using her. Even Andrade as a babyface, you know, took the mic. There was like sort of a moment of, can I have it? And it sort of was clear there's no choice. Lexi, hand me the mic, but at least he didn't just, you know, treat her like garbage. Heels always kind of pick on Tony. But, yeah, I think that's overdone, and, you know, we can thank Kevin Kelly and The Rock for that more than anything. Although the Road Warriors in the 80s just were so mean to Ken Resnick. So it's been going on a while. Yeah,
that's
and
true.
Oh, Stan Hansen and Larry Nelson.
Yes.
AWA. Oh, God. So, but, you know, when it's shtick, it's one thing. When it's a wild heel, it's another thing when it's just like a baby face just being, you know, disrespectful towards the person doing their job. So, so all that said, would you like to see the interviews in AEW presented in a different format or a different quantity, Dan?
I'm kind of with you. I mean, I wouldn't, like I said, the little vignettes at the beginning, those are always really cool, the little sound bites, just because I see that, and I just think Saturday night's main event, and then the way they, you know, I think it was Will Washington on Twitter saying, are you noticing how we incorporate this week's stars into the video at the beginning of each, just like Saturday night's main event used to be. So I like that. I think I'd be pretty nitpicky. I think right now it's a pretty good balance. I think you want to have, particularly with a hotter crowd, you want to have some interviews in the ring in front of the crowd and then a few backstage segments. So, you know, they're not all going to be hits, but I think the balance is pretty good. I can't be overly critical of that.
Yeah, so Nick, back to you. Respond to anything that either Dan or I had to say.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I guess what I was trying to say is they're getting better at it, and I'm with you guys on all that. And I think it would be great if the Collision almost turned into the Jay White CM Punk show, at least for a while, because I think both of them are just, I mean, if they're on a Collision course, that's great. And I think that'd be a great, you know, the bunch of talking going on. and then
absolutely.
On the talking thing, one other thing is I want to commend Christian on being probably one of the smarmiest, greatest heels since Classy Freddie Blassie. I mean, he just is. I loved his thing today. I just thought it was totally oblivious to the question, saying that he's taking over and he just takes over. I mean, it was just fabulous.
I don't think it was oblivious. I think it was intentional and hilarious. Like, why are you carrying around a title that you didn't win? we are champions, blah, blah, blah. Like, it just, you know, just pivoted to, you know, you see that in political debates all the time. You know,
oh, yeah,
is it
right.
true that you said this and it was proven wrong? I would like to say patriotism and American flag. And Apple, it's like, you know, it just, yeah, I pop for that. Christian is so good right now. And, you know, Luchasaurus is putting up with it and, you know, still growling and grunting and standing behind him. But, yeah, that Christian is, you know, more of him. And, you know, I'm not alone, or Todd is not alone in wanting, you know, less just kind of local hackery, you know, insulting local sports teams, especially yeah. when it's not believable, when people know Christian is on social media going, go Toronto Maple Leafs. And then he's on TV going, they suck. So, you know, sometimes, you know, the more often than not, Christian's content's great. But he's also not beyond critique or you know, being steered a little bit in different directions. But I would, if I'm Tony Khan, I make him a reason you tune into Collision or Dynamite every week. Is you just mm-hmm. you know you're going to get something entertaining. How many times as wrestling fans growing up did you not tune in to try to see two or three great matches? You tuned in because you just didn't want to miss a promo from one of the top talkers, manager or wrestler.
Oh yeah.
And if AEW added that as a feature, like an intentional feature, they have the people to do it. I think that's an area where there's some growth potential, is just making sure that the best talkers, they put a lot of time and effort into making sure they, A, have something to talk about besides insulting the local sports team, and then B, just give them the time and setting to do so.
Oh, yeah. No, I come out of the late 60s, 70s WWF in New York City, where it was the Grand Wizard, Professor Tenoro Tanaka, Freddie Blassie, you know, it, and then ultimately, of course, Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon. But yeah, I mean, you tuned in to see what outrageous outfit that Blassie was going to wear, you know, and what's his name in this? You know, for the longest time, I thought the Grand Wizard was McMahon, just in an outfit.
All right.
Just, he had this, I don't know, the facial structure. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to leave you with that image. And thanks for being here on a Saturday for us lock-ins, you know, and try and avoid the forest fire smoke and get a bike ride in.
Exactly. Oh man. Yeah. It's been a bummer that so much of the air quality has been rough here for our you know, limited time having really nice weather. But appreciate it, Nick. Thanks.
All right, Nick. Have a good night.
Yep, you too. All right, our number 347-215-8558. If you're live streaming the show, you're invited to call us. Push 1 on your keypad to let us know that you want to be on the show. We'll now go to Don from St. Louis. Don, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. Good to touch you.
So I have a question. You think the Joe attacking Roddy Strong was part of MJF, like, long game, playing with Adam Cole, or just something he did on his own?
Say that again.
At the end of the show, Joe attacked Roddy Strong. You think that was, like, you think that was MJF paying him off, or is something that Joe wanted to do on his own?
I didn't cross my mind MJF would be involved in that. Dan, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it was kind of interesting. They'd been building up this weird buddy-buddy MJF Adam Cole thing, and then they just, not that Adam Cole would have come out for MJF's match, but you thought maybe you'd get another vignette tonight. Because I didn't think Adam Cole was there in the arena until the end of the show, which was kind of just a little bit startling, I guess. Maybe startling's too strong of a word. I see where Don is potentially going. I mean, MJF is so, you know, diabolical. It would make sense that he might employ Joe to injure his buddy, so maybe Cole is even more obligated or more of a team player with MJF next week. I feel like it's probably more myself. I feel like it's more Joe just being the heel, and then you get that side benefit of that weird interaction with Punk and Cole. I think that might be more where they were going, but I wouldn't say what you're saying is without merit or possibilities either, because it does make sense.
What was Dan? Was there anything on the announcing that even intimated, suggested, hinted, oh, could this be Joe, you know, doing something for MJF? Because I mean, I asked earnestly, not because I was like, oh, it can't be possible. I was just like, what am I not?
I don't think the announcers were leading us in that direction. No, that I heard.
My inclination then is Joe was wanting to send a message to Punk, and also the goal was to get Punk cheered next Saturday night. And so, what do? You have the heel, you know, after the match, deliver a completely unnecessary post-match attack that leads to the wrestler being stretured. That to me is just it's sort of Occam's razor. I just think that's Joe A being a bad guy, AEW wanting Joe to seem like a bad guy, and Joe's trying to send a message to Punk. Look what I can do to Strong. I can do this to you too. I think it's that simple, but I can't rule out they might not reveal at some point that that MJF told Joe to do something a little extra, and that'll be one of the things that comes out later. You know, hidden camera footage or who knows what, and then that causes Adam Cole, who thinks MJF's not so bad after all, to go, wait a second, you are the snake I always thought you were. So yeah, Don, I spoiler alert, maybe you are
yeah. Sure. Another thing. You there?
Hello? Go ahead.
Yep. So, with this CM Punk being the whole uncrowned world champion thing, you think it's kind of weird that Jay White's trying to get the belt or the bag in a way? Because that seems like kind of like walking a strange line between like you're Punk champion or you're not a champion. You kind of feel that way?
Yeah, I get Punk going, I never lost, but part of being a champion is staying healthy and defending the title. And when you don't, when you can't, you get stripped of the title. That's how it works. You don't get to win an MVP trophy in the NBA if you miss 2/3 of the season, even if you had a great first third. And Punk missed a lot of the season. So to me, it's not really a babyface thing, is to carry around a bag and sort of imply, hey, this is the belt I never lost. It's the real one. And MJF just bought a replica. Punk, MJF has been semi-active and won a match that was officially sanctioned to become champion. He's officially recognized. So that's not really the angle I'd be taking. And I also, in a way, it just kind of reminds people of that night. And maybe you want
to. They don't need to do that.
No. Yeah. Yeah, so I Jay White, you know, the heel should be going, that's not MJF's a champion, not you. And, you know, ultimately I'm going to be world champion, and I can't be world champion beating you delusional whatever. So, I'm not crazy about it. I get why he's doing it. It's to antagonize MJF, and eventually that'll be, they'll play into that. But for now, yeah, it's I think it makes Punk look like, I don't know if sore loser is the right word, but not wanting to fully accept the reality of how sports works, that when you're injured, you don't get to stay champion. Dan, what do you think?
You know, when Punk brought that up the first night, I thought it was fine, but I also kind of thought they should drop it after that and then just let it sit for when he eventually does get a shot at MJF, if that makes any sense.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, but I agree with everything you're saying. And, Todd might be the better person to ask this. I don't know if UFC, if they've ever had like one of the interim champions defend that before getting the title shot, right? Like that's kind of what maybe they're going for. And I don't know that I would necessarily go that direction. I guess at the same time though, I really thought Jay White just kind of killed it overall in that interview. And so I'm pretty forgiving of it, but yeah, it is kind of a leap in logic there that I would have said, okay, I thought when he brought it up the first night, I thought that's what anyone would do. I never lost the title and I want it back. And eventually that's going to happen. So then you just let it sit. That's where I would go on that. And I think I would probably drop it at this point.
Yeah. I was going to add something you said earlier and I forgot, but that's okay. Maybe come back to me. Don, anything else you want to bring up about Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, what do you think about Chris Danielson's run with CBS Bill? I feel like it's pretty okay for a start, but I don't feel like her character is fleshed out enough for like she wasn't supposed to, I get the whole that alien thing was stupid, but I feel like she needed to be more interaction with Martin Cassidy more, or go back to that stuff a little bit more. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Dan, what do you think of Statlander's run so far? Reign.
You know, it was big when she won the title, obviously, and that worked really well. And since then, tonight wasn't great for her, I didn't think. I just thought that match was pretty sloppy. And again, the crowd, if the crowd would have been hotter, it would have been better. I do think I understand them wanting to present her as a serious champion, and I'm okay with that, but I also do agree with Don that there was a little bit of charm in her interactions with the best friends in Orange particularly. And for that, like, have they had any interaction since she's won the title?
I
don't think so. And that's a little weird. I think even just like one or two little, again, backstage things where they're congratulating her and then, you know, hey, I'm the champion now. I kind of have to, and I'm, you know, we're not going to be doing mixed tags. We're going to be doing our own thing. And but there was just kind of that abrupt cutoff. I agree that like, that was part of her charm was her interaction with that group. And it's just kind of been left hanging out there, I think.
Yeah. I have not liked much of anything Chris Statlander has done personality development wise, character development wise, other than, I think it was right after she won the title, the vignette they put together. I thought that felt the least kind of cutesy indie-rific, and more like I'm going to try to market myself as a major star, not just somebody that people on the indie scene and hardcore fans on social media get and understand. And I just don't think it's a strength of Tony Khan, frankly. I think he gets the talent when they come in, and whoever they are is who they stay. And I don't think he has the vision or the passion in that area to say, how can we make you a bigger star? Vince McMahon does. He also sometimes does a terrible job. You know, Red Rooster, Terry Taylor, yuck. And, you know, people don't like Butch, and they think Pete Dunne would be better. I, you know, push back on that a little bit. I think maybe there's a third option that's better than, you know, just Pete Dunne and, you know, somewhere triangulate him and Butch. But, I mean, so there's a whole gamut of examples of McMahon succeeding and failing, but he's always trying. He's going, what is it about you that I can amplify and market where every type of fan that we're trying to attract from age 6 to 70 looks at and says, I know what this person's about, and therefore I know how I feel about them. And that just doesn't exist with so many AEW wrestlers, including Chris Statlander, who was allowed to bring an absolutely stupid gimmick onto national television that they didn't even bother to explain. And now she's just sort of Chris Statlander, the person who your wrestling fan friend who knows about her says is good.
And she's got something, Wade. I mean,
I know.
Like, there was when she's flexing after the match, that was like one of the loudest pops the crowd gave. Like, they were happy that she won, but I don't know anything about her as a wrestling personality other than she was hurt and she fought back. And that part's cool, but she needs a mission of some sort.
Yep.
And the fact that the person that's challenging her is the one that couldn't beat the champion is weird also, although maybe they're going away from Tyus and she just lost on Wednesday night also. But that's part of it. She doesn't really have a program right now that's very compelling. That match tonight, again, I thought was pretty sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
But she does have – she has a charm to her that people like, so there's something to build on. But yeah, they've got to develop something there, because it's just, I don't know what I'm rooting for, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. Don, anything else you want to bring up?
Yes. What do you think about his Owen Hart tournament? I thought he was better booked than last year. What do you think Tony did to make it more professional and more laid out better, both on the women's side and the men's side?
Yeah, I mean it's a solid bracketing. I mean, I'm glad they're doing it because I like tournaments, and I think the semifinals are gonna line up nicely. I'm not sure how I don't know if I'm just not remembering kind of my overall feelings on last year. Well, let me ask you, Don. What do you think is better this year about it than last year in particular?
I feel like it was more like chaos because it was always like Adam Cole and his friends, Undisputed Era. And you also had that weird, like, death match between Darby and Jeff Hardy for no reason in the tournament. And also, like the last Chris Statlander got a little messed over in the tournament in a way.
Dan, how do you feel about this year's compared to last year's and just the tournament in general and this year's brackets?
Yeah, I'm literally looking up last year's tournament, I have to be honest, because other than them saying that, you know, Britt Baker and Ruby Soho is a rematch of the finals last year, and I do remember that it was Adam Cole and Samoa Joe, I don't remember as much. They had a larger bracket last year, and I think limiting it to and they did have that FTR match last year. I do remember that. I really like that. But, you know, limiting it to eight people, I think, gives a little bit better focus. Again, on the men's side in particular, I think that they're going in a good direction. It's been a little bit predictable, but predictable doesn't always mean bad. I'm reasonably okay with, you know, it's kind of more the upper talent on the women's side. So, I guess I don't have a real thinking that that last year was any better. I guess I do think there's a nice focus on this. Again, at least they have brackets. I mean, this was part of my complaint earlier. They have this Battle Bowl tag team thing. They were supposed to tell us the eight teams last Wednesday or the Wednesday before, I forget when, and right now they have three. And so at least they have brackets. I mean, that's something. I mean, again, if we're going to talk about how AEW needs to improve their focus, it just feels like such a contrivance that I'm sorry to change the subject on you, Don, but that tag team tournament just seems so contrived when Adam Cole and MJF are going to wrestle someone and it's Wednesday night. Like, you drew the names 3 weeks ago. Why don't we know who's in this tournament?
Yeah. No, that there's so much going on, you know, with Forbidden Door and introducing Collision, and you've got the Own Heart tournament going on at the same time. And, oh, yeah, Blind Eliminator tournament, Blind, whatever they call it, tournament. And they just, they're not good at explaining things, and they don't even try, which makes it worse. I think Kevin Kelly tonight is the first one to ever explain what an eliminator match is between a champion and a contender when the title isn't on the line by saying if the contender wins, then they earn a title shot. And if they lose, then they're out of title contention. Like, why was that so hard to say every time they start, you know, for the first few weeks when they started doing it? Well, they should just do it every week. Anytime they do it, they should explain what it is. And I don't know what's wrong in their system in how they, you know, how stuff goes from an idea to television, that they don't take into account people who can't read minds. And they don't. And the instincts aren't there on Excalibur's part or Tony Khan's part or whoever. So,
I think Jim Ross explained the eliminator or the whatever they call it, the championship eliminator match, or one time, I think, like the first one.
Yeah.
And they just assume everybody's watched every week of their program and that they're so locked in that they know what this means. So, yeah, that, again, good for Kevin Kelly to actually spell it out for people.
Yep. But, I mean, this tournament's good. What do you think's going to happen, Dan? CM Punk and Samoa Joe next week, and then Hobbs and Ricky Starks also in the other semifinals.
Yeah.
But who wins, and what are the finals, and who wins the final?
Okay, I think it's going to be Punk over Hobbs eventually. But if it's me, I'm doing the opposite on both matches, and then I can go either way on who I would have win on that. I think you can make a case for Ricky Stark. I still think there's enough there with Samoa Joe that I would go with him, and I would have him win, and then I would keep him strong, and then you can have a pay-per-view match where Punk beats him. And I think that's the way to do it. Like, have Joe beat him for for another time, the fourth time, and that Punk's never won, and then Punk, you know, Eye of the Tiger, whatever vignette you need to do. That's what I would do. I don't expect them to do that, but nothing. Also, they're at least somewhat unpredictable. Like, you don't know exactly what's going to happen in their tournaments, but I think it's just going to be Punk over Hobbs in the end, honestly.
Yeah, I don't have a strong feeling on what's going to happen or what should happen, because I'm really happy with the Final Four. Like,
yes.
I just think this is a good Final Four.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You're going to watch these matches and not know, you know, because you just laid it out. There's good reasons for all four to win, and all four are plausible. And, you know, there's different reasons to go with different ones to win. Starks would stand to benefit the most. Samoa Joe, it would cement him as a top contender to Punk. Hobbs is somebody who, you know, they see as a centerpiece top four, top three heel on Collision. And then there's Punk, you know, you just, he's your top star. Maybe he should just win a lot to show how good he is. So, yeah. All right, Don, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
No. Just Dustin Rhodes did amazing tonight, and that's it. Have a good night.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He
Thanks, Don.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that I was going to bring that up anyway, so I'm glad Don did at the end there. I am a proponent of Dustin Rhodes. I'm a fan of his. I think he should have been more active on AEW television the last few years and on pay-per-views. And, I mean, I know they don't want, you know, he shouldn't. He's not going to be a workhorse in his 50s now. You know, I don't know what he goes through after a match to recover. So, you know, that could be a factor. But I would have done more with him. So I say that as a foundation for I don't think he should have gotten as much offense and lasted as long against Hobbs tonight. I know he's a legend.
I don't think he should have needed as much – Hobbs needed as much interference to win either.
Right. Because the problem with QT Marshall – it's not that manager interference isn't called for sometimes, but, and I get that, you know, Hobbs, you know, we need him to be a heel. So it's better if there's cheating to win and who better than to have a heel help Hobbs win than to get him heel heat. I get that sort of entry level booking mindset, but it's circumstantial. It depends on the context. Hobbs is a dominant heel. He shouldn't be getting help to win, especially because he isn't established as a top heel yet. You got to prove your top level by beating people like Dustin Rhodes, who, as Kevin Kelly said, isn't at the end of his career, but he sees it. He sees it's on the horizon here. And so to me, Hobbs should do what Miro did and just, you know, I mean, not I shouldn't say plow through Dustin, but Miro, he should look dominant to the point where the sympathy is on how could he beat up that legendary veteran near the end of his career, Dustin Rhodes, so ruthlessly, as opposed to he eked out a win because QT Marshall interfered.
Yeah.
That's the wrong message to send. I strongly disagree with that. And I just don't think Dustin should have gotten in as much offense. Hobbs is a project right now that they need to be building. And Dustin is not, you know, it doesn't hurt Dustin to lose more. And that's been an issue with AEW. Sometimes the wrestlers and the agents are like, they want to be nice. They want to work, you know, oh, I don't want to bury you. And you need Tony Khan going, no, the story we're telling here, it's no disrespect, Dustin, but it's how dominant powerhouse Hobbs is going into the match with Starks and maybe being in the finals. And I'm focused all my criticism, Dan, on why they were doing it for Hobbs. But I actually am more skeptical that the reason QT Marshall interfered is to earn his keep. That he's out there, and so he can't just stand there and do nothing. So But since I'm
here,
and
he should have, and the gal they just signed should have too. I mean, it's a credit to Dustin Rhodes that he is credible enough and done a good enough job that he had something to give to Will Hobbs by having Will Hobbs win clean. And it's the Owen Hart tournament. Like, you know, when they did the tournament for Mr. Mushnick in St. Louis and Harley Race won it, I want to go back whenever it was, 1987. Harley Race won clean because that was St. Louis wrestling. You're honoring Owen Hart. You have that FTR match last year. You do things to say, hey, this is a big deal. And even though Will Hobbs is a bad guy, he's going to win clean because that's kind of the way we're honoring Owen Hart. And maybe that sounds cornball, but I don't think so. And it was a good match, but I had several notes about that, Wade. I was just like, this is way too much interference, way too much BS, and not enough Will Hobbs getting something out of this.
Yeah. I want to get into some of your nitpicks in a moment. I'm going to read an email.
We've hit
David.
Most of them now. That was a big one. So.
Yeah. I got a few more.
Okay.
David Wolf from Washington, D.C. emailed, and he says, hey, Wade and Daniel. That's what he said. This is not the show I'd have booked coming off of last week's ratings drop and a hot, well, admittedly, Tony couldn't have known how hot, WWE Afternoon Premium Live event. I can't see anything but another significant drop with Collision being skippable in week 3. Habits are formed early with television shows. If there ever was a time for hotshotting, it was tonight. Thanks. So we talked about this earlier, and I don't know if 1 week, even week 3, you want a hotshot for the sake of one rating. But I think that doesn't mean that what they did was enough. And I think doing more last week to build up what was happening this week would have been helpful. I mean, this is the thing. You know, I put myself in Tony Khan's chair. You know, imagine if he's listening and venting, you know, via text message at us, which he doesn't do. But if he did, he'd be like, come on. MJF defended the title in an unadvertised match. We advertised it was his first Collision appearance. CM Punk, biggest, highest paid star in the company, big star returning. He's on commentary for a main event with Samoa Joe and Roderick Strong with history between them. And then you got Juice Robinson and Ricky Starks out there in another tournament match. You have a showcase interview that people have been clamoring for with Jay White. Plus, we gave you your obligatory women's match with, you know, it'd be hard for him to defend the type of build that they had there. Right. And a good old school but useful squash win for Miro to show off his moves, his attitude, his demeanor. I'm not sure that this felt like phoned in or waving a white flag. And I go back to, if you put this in front of a crowd of 8,000 in a major arena with a, you know, the scoreboard ribbon lit up and just bright lights instead of, you know, the dark shadows and strategic spotlights trying to hide the empty spot, it just would have felt, I think, bigger. I think we're projecting bad booking or underwhelming.
Right. No, yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I don't mean to do that either. And if you do have Tony Khan's text, go ahead and tell him he can contact me. I took my shot to try to get him to speak to my sports econ class, but that he's a busy man, so that didn't work out. But it's still an open invitation, Tony, if you're listening to this and you want to interact with some K-State students that might become AEW fans. Although Chris Harrington was amazing when he spoke to my econ club, so I should mention that also. Yeah, he's great. As you know, he's great. And he came in and visited with the club, and fascinating talk, but that's a story for another day. I will say, in Tony's defense or in AEW's defense, they mentioned at the scrum basically that they had some big plans for Bryan Danielson this week. And, you know, maybe there's a domino effect. I don't know. But he was going to be on Wednesday night's show doing something. They may have replaced him. That moved people in differently that couldn't be on Collision. So to be fair, you know, they have done, as you mentioned, they've been doing a lot of different big-time shows and doing a lot of really important stuff. And this was not a throwaway show. I really was excited, reasonably excited about the main event, but I do think the timing of it is unfortunate that clearly the other three of the first four week shows, this one, I don't think you can argue, did not feel the least important out of the four.
Of the three shows, this was the most unimportant out of four?
Well, including next week. So if I look at next week also, I'm saying I look at these four shows that are the first 4 weeks of Collision, and this one's clearly the one that, you know, as David mentioned, if you had to miss one, most people – now, I'm going to be at a concert next Saturday night, so I'll watch it on DVR, and I had to watch the second one on DVR. But you know, I'm more excited about next week's show than I was this week's show.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. I just like this was an important week, and I'm trying to look at it and go, what, you know, like from David's email, what does he think they should have done besides feature a center ring Jay White promo, MJF defending his world title, his first appearance at Collision, and
did they promote the Jay White promo? I guess they did a little bit. That, I mean, like even some, like you said, maybe even the promotion, because
exactly,
that was compelling, right?
It was,
but
you
know, people just happen to see it, like. You don't get your audience after the show starts and say, oh, well, you know, by the way, we're going to have this. Well, you know, hell, you lost those people. You know, you have to be really thoughtful about that. And that's, you know, that Jay White's a big enough deal that they could have done a better job promoting that.
Yeah. And they haven't done a good job promoting Jay White so far. To me, this was a good sign that hopefully opens some eyes to what he should be doing more of. Another nitpick is I'm a fan of Ethan Page's work and his role in the company, and I would probably do a little bit more with him.
That interview. Oh,
I don't need another wrestler coming out and talking about how they're underpushed and underappreciated.
Oh, and I went to Calgary and I did the extra work, and that's why I deserve a title shot. That stuff makes me so tired. Oh,
yeah. It's totally out of character. I mean, it's a great babyface promo about what his dad did, but how does this fit who he current? I mean, I know he's trying to babyface himself for one night against MJF.
And fine, do that in front of the live crowd. Don't put it on TV. If you want a better crowd reaction, you can do that off TV. But yeah,
And don't, as a babyface, heel on the company. My wife asked me, when will the company pay him back for all he does for it? You know what? That got Brian Cage in trouble, and his wife was saying that on social media. I don't know if Tony Khan approved that ahead of time, but I think it's that big of a deal. But, like, why do fans want to hear you whine about the fact that you're the Miz of AEW who answers every phone call and goes everywhere, but now you're complaining about not being appreciated?
Nobody wants to hear that, Wade. My students don't want to hear that. I mean, I have a good job. I like my job, but I have my complaints too. You know what I don't do? I don't cry in front of my 200 students about it. I'll make lights. I'll say, hey, we got this raise this year, but it's lower than the rate of inflation to try to teach the difference between nominal and real wages. That's as far as I go. Like, you don't – oh, yeah. I'm so with you on this. I was so frustrated with that entire back and forth. I was like, oh. And – there's no explanation of the whole, you know, Hardy thing, which, whatever. I mean, maybe that was too complicated to even try, but I don't know. That was off-putting. I would describe that as off-putting.
Yeah. Another thing that jumped out to me is just how clunky, unfortunately, Ricky Starks and Juice Robinson was. They did not have in-ring chemistry. Starks, you know, tripped and just fell into that middle rope, and it might have – scraped his eye, or you know, he hit the taut rope with his eye and was blinking hard, and then, you know, Kevin Kelly's trying to cover, going, oh, that's why you drop down, so sometimes you can trip people. And it's like, well, if you drop down and want to trip people, you could raise your arm or your leg more often and trip them. That's not the intent. The intent is, you know, however we're supposed to rationalize it as fans, that you're dropping down because you want the wrestler to run the ropes and you think you can out-duel them on the rebound by, you know, leapfrogging or catching up with the dropkick or whatever. But Kevin Kelly improvising, going, that's why you do the drop down, to trip people. Well, wrestlers have been doing terrible drop downs for decades because I don't see very many people tripping.
Right.
But that wasn't even the end of it. I mean, it was just.
I have a question for you, and maybe you're going to bring this up. And I don't know this. I've not wrestled. Like, there were two times where Juice dropped him, kind of where he was like hitting the ropes.
Yep.
Like, is that supposed to look dangerous, or is that just a screw up that was dangerous? I don't think it added that much to the match, but it was just weird. He would drop him, and then his leg. It's like he didn't drop him with enough room. To not, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but he hit the bottom rope with his legs twice when he dropped him. I thought that's unusual. It didn't even strike me as particularly dangerous, but it might have been.
I agree. I didn't know what was going on there. They both seem to be, you know, wrestling to the beat of a different metronome. Is that it? Metronome?
Yeah.
Is that what?
Yes.
That goes back to,
yeah,
I haven't said that word like more than once in 10 years.
I can
visualize
it. But
yeah, it seemed like they were both. Yep, it seemed like they were both wrestling to a different beat, you know, a different rhythm, and it was causing problems. It just wasn't good. I haven't done the forensics. I haven't asked anybody about it, like what went wrong. But I will, you know, I want to tap into some of the wrestlers that I communicate with and try to find out if they saw the match or if they'll watch it and give their opinion, because I don't really know who to blame or anything either. Like, sometimes it just doesn't work out. But this was pre-taped, and they weren't able to clean it up, or maybe it was even worse than they cleaned it up. That was not good.
Yeah.
And then Andrade. I don't think it's a good look for a babyface taking the mic from the interviewer, which, you know, we covered that earlier. It's just like, whatever. I mean, that's occasionally it's fine, but
he's respectful. Fired up.
But he was so fired up, and all he yelled is in Spanish, I need that mask. And it was just like throwing this like tantrum.
Yep.
And I get that they've got a backstory on it, and I get, you know, the culture and the importance of the mask, but it just has not been clearly established and underlined enough, I think, for the average viewer. And then it doesn't fit Andrade's persona that we've grown to know, that he would be so whiny and what words are failing me? Just kind of whiny and pouty about, like, I want. It was like Weezer Guto when he used to just yell and be like, my voice is cracking, but I'm mad. It just was unbecoming. Like, that's just one of those where, again, if you have an experienced producer who has a respect to the talent, they'd go, Andrade, let's redo this. And we like your passion, but we need to kind of change the tone a little bit to more menacing and less temper tantrum of a six-year-old. And that's what it came across. And that's the type of quality control in AEW that just, it's just kind of sloppy, and it's there sometimes. And so I don't know. It sounds like that struck you a little bit too, Dan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And again, I don't know that there was an inappropriate number of interview segments, but again, this one was a miss. So you kind of wasted one there, in my opinion. It just, I'm probably a little less into some of the House of Black stuff than some people anyway. But yeah, this, yeah, exactly. He did not seem like a babyface. He seemed like someone that was pouting over, yes, it's important, but you haven't convinced the audience enough of its importance, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just, it didn't strike me as the right tenor to take in that spot. What do you think about the Gun Boys, Austin and Colton, with Juice and Jay? I'm a big fan of the Gun Brothers. I think Colton, I've been touting Colton and Austin for their heel work, their bump taking. You know, they hit the ropes hard, they flat back bump hard, they sell like crazy for their babyface opponents. There's no sense of I want to be a cheered heel. Like, they just know
no.
their job and they go out and do it, and I love it. And they would fit. You can drop them into any territory in the 80s and 70s, and they would just, the promoter would be like, yeah, we want to use you. So I like them, but I don't know if having them and Juice as part of Bullet Club Gold with Jay reflects well on Jay picking serious people to build a Bullet Club-like faction that will seem threatening. It's just, you know, Colton is a little more serious than Austin,
yeah.
But Juice and Austin are goofs. Colton borders on that, and it just feels like, no, you need some other people who are more serious in that group, and it's just a weird fit. I mean, there's probably an endpoint there that they're leading to with this, with the Guns and Juice and Jay, but maybe not. I think the Guns are better off just on their own doing their shtick, and adding somebody different to Juice and Jay, someone more serious.
I think they should eventually add a Tama Tonga type enforcer.
Yeah.
You
Solo
know,
Sokoa
maybe,
type to be right
yeah,
up to date.
There you
yeah.
go. Thank you. Yeah, I'm thinking Bullet Club. But yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that could be Will Hobbs, if they do decide to move on from the Team QT, that could be
yeah.
a Wardlow if the things don't work out with him.
I like that.
Yeah. And so I'm going to push back a little bit. Like I said, I saw a lot in that interview tonight in the chemistry. And I don't know if you saw the little – they only aired a small part of it, but that vignette before the eight-man last week with Juice and Jay and the Guns, it was really good. Like, I think they have a chemistry there, and I think it's going to build, and it's going to work. And it may be, again, I don't suspect that Juice and Jay win the tag titles anytime soon, but I wouldn't rule it out either, or at least they may win the Eliminator match, that's what it's called, next week to get a title shot. And they could play off that dynamic too. And the Guns were like, well, wait, we're supposed to be the tag team. Y'all are supposed to be the singles. I don't know. I thought there was a lot of chemistry there tonight. So I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I think that, and then, you know, the Guns, they had their titles, but then, you know, AEW struggles sometimes with what's the next thing that you do after you lose the titles. And I think this is an appropriate next thing. I think this could be a pretty compelling partnership, whether they do some occasional eight mans or which they've already done, obviously, or just continue to interact with one another. But I saw a real chemistry. I'm repeating myself, but that interview, I saw a lot that I think they can build off of.
I hope you're right. I hope I hope I warm more up to it. I'm just so used to, you know, the Guns being goofs and you know, when they're right there next to Juice, it just feels like 3 out of 4 are, you know, their reputation is being goofs. So, But I'm open-minded to this developing, and if there's chemistry there that they can build on and turn this into something that just feels totally natural a month from now, I'm all for that.
Yeah. If you get a chance, and I'll send you the interview, but that eight-man they did building up the interview they did building up the eight-man last week, Juice was kind of being out there, and then Jay's like, whoa, calm down, and he just brought it all together, and then the Guns had their little 15-second saying, but it struck me as somewhat serious. It was good. So I've seen enough from them that's good that I'm hopeful, I guess.
Yeah. So anything else in your notes or nitpicks that we haven't covered yet?
You know, along with the announcers, don't mistreat your – I mean, like, they should protect Aubrey better. At least have one referee that we think knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just – it's nothing new, but – Yeah, I mean, like, protect your announcers and protect your referees. Like, you're, you know, what did Eddie Graham say? I mean, Gordon Solie is the fan. Like, you don't beat up the fans. You don't mistreat the fans. You show them a little bit of you can be smarmy, but show them a little bit of respect and don't make the referees look like idiots. I guess those would be the biggest things. I'm kind of browsing through my notes here. But that was the main thing that I had here. I like the, and I'd seen it before. I like the Wheeler Yuta interview. I like the hype for Wednesday night with that. I think, you know, you want to see Kenny kick his butt, and I assume that's what's going to happen. So I thought that was a nice, you know, you want to see him get his, and they're going to keep building the blood and guts. So I thought that was a good use of their time.
Anything else from the show? Jump out, Dan, before we shift a little bit about Forbidden Door with you.
Nothing that I can. Oh, well, MJF as the ugly American was amazing. that gear, like, and we take him for granted because he's so good. But I mean, that was just fantastic. And like, what are we supposed to do as the fans? Like, shouldn't you know? It's like, yeah, take that, Canada. MJF's Mr. USA. I guess we're for him. I don't know, but
yeah.
I don't care. That was amazing. Like that's the kind of stuff that I love about wrestling. That was such good TV. I thought, yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring that up.
Yeah, MJF is good at what he does. And
oh yeah,
yeah. It's fun seeing him on Collision and fun seeing him wrestle. I thought, you know, Ethan Page saying you're the bare minimum bitch was a line that, you know, might get some heat because certainly. I mean, I don't even think it's not a little bit of a shoot.
Yeah.
MJF would, you know, push back strongly and go, you know, he's producing some of the most compelling segments, highest rated segments. Not everybody loves every direction he goes in. He is a young artist who is experimenting and finding his voice and being daring and what he does, he puts a lot of thought into and a lot of effort, obviously. And then he's just a smart, he's a student of the game. There's a lot that makes it work. But the notion that he's coming out, you know, to the ring as champion, and he has like, you know, a 4-0-1 record halfway into the year.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, I mean, you are kind of, you know, the baby faces have evidence, a foundation to say you're the bare minimum bitch. And I think some wrestlers in the back who are tearing it up in the ring every week are going, yeah, why is this guy not doing more?
Well,
but there is something about the MJF mystique that, you know, that where he gets heat from that.
And a couple other things. That's part of what made the Ethan Page interview more frustrating. It's like you had that was good, and then you did all this side stuff that nobody wants to hear about. And I guess to revisit Don's point, I've been thinking about that a lot. Samoa Joe's character doesn't strike me as the mercenary type. Like even Sammy Guevara maybe he will sell it to MJF. To me, that made a lot more sense than Samoa Joe. I like the theory, but I think it's actually just what we saw. I think Joe continues to be Joe, the tough guy that's out there to intimidate his opponents.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say too, you want. I don't, you know, it's too early to make broad generalizations about how Collision will be different from Dynamite, but I would be careful to have it seem to pulling from the past and like. Old indie scene stuff.
Yep.
Like they did a good job with it. And I think people who are watching and people are putting the show together, you know, like, hey, talking about what Joe and Punk did, you know, 20 years ago, it's like nearly 20 years ago. It's like, I mean, that's good. You know, I mean, there's that should be brought up, but there was something about early Dynamites. And it's like, speaking of, and Sammy, you saying Sammy Guevara is what sparked it. It's like, you had Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin and Jungle Boy. And there was this sense of you don't want to be so small time that you're like going to the club where only 40 people see the band and 5 years later they're selling out stadiums and you're like, I was there when. But there is a little bit about Collision where you want to find like 3 or 4 or 5 like young up and coming wrestlers that you believe in, whether that you pull them from Dynamite or you hire them from the indie scene or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And add a little bit of youth to the show and a little bit of more forward thinking than looking back. That's just, because even Punk, I mean, he's 44 years old. You're pulling from nostalgia by building around Punk. MJF's young. Ricky Starks is essentially young.
Right.
I mean, he's in his 30s, but, you know.
Young to the audience.
You know, yeah, young to the audience and certainly carries himself young. And Jay White is. But otherwise, you don't want it to feel like this is, you know, somebody who's nostalgic for ROH booking Collision. They have ROH for that, and, you know, so if you watch it. So anyway, that's just kind of a more of a broad critique, but it's only 3 weeks in, and it was a tape show, and we'll see. But yeah, a little bit more youth and energy and color. Yeah. It just felt kind of drab.
Yeah.
All right, so Dan, talk a little bit about your Forbidden Door experience last weekend.
Yeah, this made an appearance on the VIP audio, which was good to hear about. I go to Las Vegas every summer to play the World Series of Poker. And I was coming back Tuesday, so, you know, I'm like, do I want to watch this on my computer screen? I'm like, no. And I looked it up, and they had it in a couple different theaters in Vegas. So I took an Uber out to the Cannery movie theater, got there, got my $20 concessions, and bought my ticket. And there were like 30, 35 people in there. And, like, it was a good crowd. I mean, for that, you know, the theater was over half full for sure. And everything was great, and 9:50 rolls around, or I guess, what would that be? It was 8:50 Vegas time, 10:50 our time. We're the good people in the central time zone, and they cut off the feed.
And who's in the ring right now, Dan?
Brian Danielson and Tazuchika Okada. I'm wearing my Okada t-shirt. I'm there to see this match. Like, as great as Omega and Ospreay was, I mean, that was the match I was there to see above all others. And I thought it was a no-brainer main event. There was some discussion on that. I think that was the dream match, right? And I still haven't seen the end of it. We got the video with the people getting the popcorn and buying their beer and the movie audio for 5 minutes. And then we get the audio from the Forbidden Door with the movie popcorn and the movie beer scene. And then we hear Okada tapped out, and then we get video. And you know, I never complain. I try to be whatever. I don't ask for refunds, but when I went out there and that woman in charge of the movie theater said, we got some free movie tickets for you, I was like, lady, I'm never coming back to the theater again in my life. And I said, and this other lady's like, you wouldn't do this to the Marvel fans, you just don't respect wrestling.
Oh, wow.
Oh, she was getting it. And I, you know, I'm an older guy. I mean, this gal was probably 25, 26. I felt really bad, but I was like, I'm sorry, but this is unacceptable. I'm getting a refund. I don't care how much I have to call my credit card company, because you ruined, you know, what I've been waiting for years to see. And eventually she says to her, she's like, well, just give him a refund. But then the other people in line heard that, and she was done. Like, there were probably about 20 of us that stuck around to complain. Some people just took it. I was like, I was so angry. I was like, it was bad, Wade. It's not cool. Like, good for everybody else. Like, I think, you know, thanks to me, maybe there was a false narrative out there. It was just the Cannery movie theater in Las Vegas that screwed up. It was not an AEW problem. It was a local problem, but it was a big problem. And that place, you don't need to be going to the Cannery. I don't mind gambling, as Todd loves to bring up. That place is depressing anyway. And so I was walking around, you know, anyway, I got out of there pretty quickly, actually, after the show. But I was just like, unbelievable. Yeah. So that was an experience. I really recommend the movie theater experience to watch AEW, though. Like, it was really cool. At first, people were kind of quiet, but it was mostly either BCC or Punk fans there, actually, which was kind of interesting. And, you know, you'd go out and get your popcorn refilled, you'd talk a little trash and have a good time with it. Everybody was cool. It was fun. But there was another location in Vegas I wish I would have gone to, because I would have, you know, it's $25 for the ticket, but I don't care. I that was well worth it to see that show. But not to see the first 3 hours and 50 minutes and then not the end. That was a disappointment.
Speaking of Punk fans and BCC, what do you think of the Punk Elite situation, the path we are to get here, and how Tony Khan is handling it now, and what would you do going forward?
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot, and it's a really good question.
Tony Khan would call that a great question.
He sure would. He you know... If I ever do go to one of these press scrums and he doesn't say it's a great question, I'm going to feel like the world's biggest idiot.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. I'm not so sure. I know everybody talks against the brand split type thing. But if this is the situation, I think it's okay to have, like you were saying, focus on Jay White, focus on Will Hobbs, make this their show. Like, cause they, you know, Will Hobbs has never really gotten a focus the entire time he's in AEW. And if you force that to say, these are our guys and our women, then I think it's not so bad at least. And then you can get rid of it, you know, in 6 to 8 months and then combine the rosters. But I think you can build some anticipation by having maybe not a super hard brand split, but I don't have a big problem with it because, you know, it was kind of like, okay, Adam Cole is on the show tonight. I didn't know if he was going to be on that show or not. I mean, he seems to get along with everybody by all accounts, so I wasn't super shocked. But, you know, maybe not because they're not as good of buddies, but maybe in 2 months Adam Page shows up on that show. You know, like you can do it gradually. I don't think it's so bad to kind of hold back and to have and but if you're building anticipation for something that never happens, then maybe not so much. But, you know, I guess I'm at least not completely opposed to this idea of kind of keeping some people on a unique show in the short run. And I'm curious what you think about that because I've thought about it a lot. I don't know that I have the right answer.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with a soft or even a hard roster split. My sort of spitball idea is to do a hard brand split, but a reshuffling draft after every pay-per-view, not Forbidden Door, but after the AEW-centric pay-per-views, just do a shake-up every time, you know, a roster, a draft, or however they want to format it. I'm sure,
yeah.
You know, hopefully they would explain it better than other things that they do that are
right.
Complicated. And no, I don't want a battle royal where every odd number person eliminated is on one roster and every even number person is on the other or anything like that, although I shouldn't give them ideas when it comes to battle royals. But, yeah, just something where, like, every 3 months, you know, give or take, you can count
see,
on.
See, I think I would do it every 6 months. I think I would really build anticipation a little bit more myself. That's just
yeah,
my thing.
And I'm totally open to it. I mean, when I say I'm spitballing, yeah. But more than once a year, you know. And the idea of doing it every 3 months doesn't mean everybody ends up on a different show.
Right.
But it gives you a chance because you are limiting your roster, the matchups that you have, that every 3 months after a pay-per-view, you can kind of go, all right, we did this wrestler now got a big win at the pay-per-view, but they have no fresh opponents on this brand. How do we get them fresh opponents and not have it just be something that just sort of happens? Oh, a guy who's almost always only on Dynamite's now almost always on Collision.
Right.
So the idea of having a little more structure appeals to me in that way. But yeah, if you do it every 6 months and build up to it, it pops a rating and you get fresh matchups, that can absolutely work too. So I think having Punk sometimes on one show and sometimes on the other, and the Elite sometimes on one show, sometimes on the other, you could do that. But yeah, I kind of, part of me just likes the internal competition, the intramural.
Exactly.
Rivalry,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, you know, like, okay, when Dynamite's in Chicago, that's one thing I suppose, but yeah, generally speaking, I really like that. I just, that's what the brand split was supposed to be in WWE and obviously never was, never really was. And, I think that, you know, this is like, and it's, I think Saturday's tough. I mean, I was talking to you about this earlier. I mean, once college football rolls around, this is probably going to be a permanent spot on my DVR. I mean, college
yep.
football is much bigger than, you know, again, we teach sports econ. We talk about, if you add up all the viewership of these college football games, I mean, it's massive compared to anything else on television. And that's going to be a real thing considering the target audience of Collision.
Who are you personally tending to side with more between Punk and the Elite based on what's come out and what you've seen them say publicly and how they've acted publicly? Or are you kind of agnostic or, hey, we need more information. I know how this is. You hear one side, you take sympathy, you hear the other side, you're like, oh, well, now I see things completely differently. Kind of where are you falling
yeah.
on that?
I guess because I think you can't really lose sight of how this all got started, that it's hard not to be a little more sympathetic to the Elite. But I'm also like, I think it's unfortunate. You know, again, you're a professional. I'm a professional. Like, you don't have to love everybody that you work with, but you need to at some point say, okay, you know, this is for the greater good, and my boss has probably treated me with more respect than anybody else would have given my situation when I started working for my boss. Now that I've established myself and I'm valuable to the other team, you know, maybe they treat me just fine. But if I think about how, and I would say that for all those people involved, I think that Tony Khan has shown them more respect and more leniency and tried to work with them as best he can more than WWE would have. And I think maybe that's a little underappreciated by everybody involved. So, you know, yeah, I was more strongly elite maybe than I am today. I would still probably lean in that direction if you forced me to pick a side, but I just think, you know, life's hard. Jobs are not the greatest things in the world. I think at some point you just, I mean, the idea, you know, Punk's trying to sell it like, oh, I'm past it. I'm really trying to work with these guys, and that's the narrative he wants out there. And I think maybe that's a little bit overstated, but I don't think it's completely false either. And I do think that there's a case to be made to just say to everybody, look, you know, this is work. It's not fun time. Just go do your job. You don't have to go have beers or water or whatever. The Punk likes the same water I do, that Spindrift water that he had at the press conference where he threw that. That stuff is fantastic. I know we don't get kickbacks for this, but I'm a big believer in Spindrift. But, yeah, I guess that's where I would fall. I like everybody needs to just move along, and you don't have to do a lot of business either, but there's too much on the table not to do business, in my opinion.
Very good. Anything else you want to bring up from Forbidden Door or AEW in general before we wrap up here, Dan?
Really excited about G1. Really excited about seeing Eddie Kingston over there. I do wish there was a little bit more of an AEW influence on G1 this year. But I'm imagining that I'll jump on with Sean a couple times if I can and participate that, because that's really probably my biggest passion in wrestling. And no, I just really appreciate being involved. I'm going to keep after you. I'm going to try and sell you on Waterloo. We're 3 weeks away. It's going to be a great time up there. I know Les Thatcher will be there. I think Ron Simmons, JBL, Jerry Briscoe always is the king of Waterloo, the mayor, the nicest guy in the world. Like, if you've never met Jerry Briscoe at Waterloo, Iowa, or anywhere, I'm sure, because he's just like the nicest guy in the world. Like, you cannot go to Waterloo and run into Jerry Briscoe and not feel welcome. So yeah. Anybody listening, I would encourage them to go. And I'm going to stay after you to see if I can get you out there this year. I know you've been there a lot. And yeah, I hope that's going to be a good time, and looking forward to it.
Cool. Dan, it's been fun. It's been an hour and a half talking AW with you and some New Japan. And hopefully we can do this two, three more times this summer before college football kicks in. When does college football start?
Oh, end of August. So we've got some time here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll let you know the Saturdays I'm around. I'm doing a little traveling, but I'd love to do it again. This was fun, and appreciate all the callers. Those were all sharp comments. So that's always, and that's not unusual for the Torch, but it's nice to interact with those folks.
Absolutely. All right. Well, great. Thanks to everybody for listening, whether you were live or downloading the show on delay, and we'll talk to you Monday night after Raw. So join us then if you are a WWE Raw viewer. And thanks to Dan Keister. And this is Wade Keller signing off for now.